Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories we are covering across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, August 2nd, 2023. An analyst says Sudan's conflict continues to spread across the country.
The war that began on April 15th is spreading to parts of Sudan where it wasn't active. And it is intensifying, starting with Khartoum, where most of the fighting occurs, and in Darfur.
And aid agencies in southern Kordofan region say lots of refugees are fleeing to South Sudan due to intense fighting. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The conflict between Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces has been spreading and intensifying 15 weeks after its eruption. That's according to a report released today by the think tank Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker. In an interview with my colleague Nabil Biagio from New Jersey, the director of the group, Suleiman Baldo, emphasized on the need to put more pressure on Sudan's warring parties to stop the fighting, and different mediators must coordinate their efforts to achieve peace in Sudan.
The war that began on April 15th is spreading to parts of Sudan where it wasn't active, and it is intensifying, starting with Khartoum, where most of the fighting occurs. And in Darfur, where the government forces, the Sudan armed forces, suffered setbacks as the rapid support forces took over control of several army garrisons in Darfur. And therefore, the situation over the last 4 weeks, as outlined in Sudan Conflict Monitor, issued by Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker, indicates that the fighting is really affecting more people in terms of its humanitarian effect, and it's more severely disrupting humanitarian deliveries, the forcing thousands of people to leave their homes. The situation is really serious and concerning.
In the report, you mentioned the potential Russian influence here. What are the potential consequences of Sudan seeking support from Russia in resolving the conflict? We have seen the deputy head of Sudan's Sovereignty Council, Malik Agar, who is on the side of the army, of course, visit Russia twice in the last 2 months. How do you read this?
Most of the armament of the army, the National Army of Sudan, are of Soviet era or Russian origin. And Sudan has also developed its weapon manufacturing capability with a lot of capacity transferred from former Soviet republics. And therefore, you know, it is expected that the army would turn to Russia to replenish its war machine, because during the current conflict, it has lost a lot of vehicles, aircrafts. It will need spare parts for the functioning Air Force assets and so on. And that's why you would expect that the visit by the vice president of the Sovereignty Council, Malik Agar, to have discussed these issues, although this doesn't appear in the official communique from the visit. Malik Agar also represented Sudan in the summit held by President Vladimir Putin for African states. And again, nothing was mentioned about military hardware being shipped to Sudan, but I expect this to have been the main topic in the discussion between the two. There is another aspect to the Russian involvement, which is that of the Wagner Group, which is present in Sudan and which is engaged in business deals both with the rebel support forces and the Sudan Armed Forces.
Briefly, I want you to comment on the efforts made by different mediation processes to resolve the crisis in Sudan. We have the Jeddah platform involving the US and Saudi Arabia. We have regional bodies like the AU, like IGAD, and regional actors like Egypt. They have all so far failed to stop the fighting. Why and what is the way forward?
Well, the diplomatic efforts to negotiate, to get the parties to negotiate a peaceful settlement to the conflict has largely failed because there is little political will in either the Sudan Armed Forces or the Rapid Support Forces to reach a settlement, with each believing that they can obliterate the other and prevail militarily. And this is contributing to the stalemate at the diplomatic level. But the failure of diplomacy is largely due also to the international and regional actors not exerting sufficient pressure on the two parties to force them to change behavior and agree to conclude peacefully. Another reason for the slow pace of mediations is that there are multiple platforms, and multiple platforms usually and inherently encourage the belligerents to shift, their engagement from one to the other, so that they can make some time to prevail militarily, as I suggested. Therefore, it is incumbent upon the international and regional actors to really seek to speak with one voice, unify their efforts, and they need to coordinate very closely so that their complementarity achieve more than what a single one of them can achieve. This is what we are calling for in our Sudan conflict monitor issued today by Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker, with the participation of High News Network and the Human Rights Hub of Sudan.
That was Seliman Baldo, the head of the think tank Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the U.S. state of New Jersey. Still on Sudan, much attention has been given to the fighting in Sudan's capital, Khartoum, and its troubled Darfur region. However, the Kordofan area on the border with South Sudan has also been seeing intense clashes. Thousands of people in the area have fled to South Sudan as fatalities due to the conflict increase. Henry Wilkins looks at this new front in this report from Reng, South Sudan.
Like thousands of others, Mohamed Hamdan Mohamed has just arrived in South Sudan from El Abid in North Kordofan. He says that since Sudan's war started in mid-April, fighting between the Sudanese military and paramilitary rapid support forces, the RSF, has intensified. Mohamed says he came to South Sudan out of fear for his safety, fear for his life. He says that friends in Sudan were killed, which he saw with his own eyes when the government and the RSF were fighting. He adds that some were able to flee, but others were injured or killed. Video taken from social media purports to show people taking cover from crossfire in Kordofan. The fighting in Kordofan is partly what triggered the mass displacement seen here. The Sudanese Armed Forces, the SAF, have accused rebels from the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North, or SPLMN, of breaking a ceasefire and attacking their troops throughout June and July. The SPLMN is a group of ethnically Nuba people active in Kordofan since the 1980s. According to experts, the SPLMN has long-standing grievances with the mostly ethnically Arab Sudanese government and is taking advantage of the breakdown of law and order caused by the war in Sudan. The rebel group's stated aim is to secure more political representation for the Nuba people. Sama Salman is president of the U.S.-educated Sudanese Association.
There have long been ethnic tensions between Khartoum, center of government, and the people of the Nuba Mountains, who have long been marginalized. We're really at a tipping point where we may see South Kordofan being dragged into the war.
The fighting between the SAF and SPLMN only accounts for one aspect of the fighting in Kordofan, however. Data from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, a non-profit that remotely monitors global conflict, shows there have been 485 fatalities in Kordofan due to conflict since Sudan's war started in April. In the same period before the conflict, there were just 30. an increase of more than 15 times. The data also reveals that approximately 80% of the fatalities can be linked to clashes between the paramilitary RSF and the SAF, which this video from social media purports to show. Asked what the RSF is trying to achieve in Kordofan, one expert said, "It's not clear." Eric Reeves is a Sudan expert and professor emeritus at Smith College in the US.
That's a good question. Political ambitions in Darfur are clear. This is where land has been promised to RSF recruits from other places in West Africa, Niger, Mali. It may be that some of this land has already been promised to RSF fighters, as it's been promised to them in Darfur.
But what is clear is that average citizens are being forced to flee the area in the thousands. In July, the United Nations said around 8,000 people have been displaced internally in Kordofan. There is no data on how many have fled to South Sudan. Jamisco Fela has just arrived in South Sudan from Kordofan. He says he witnessed 16 people from South Sudan's Dinka tribe killed in Kordofan, adding that they were killed in crossfire by government forces. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Renk, South Sudan.
From South Sudan, we cross back here to the United States, where legal jeopardy for Donald Trump is growing after a federal grand jury in Washington indicted the former U.S. president for illegally trying to upend his 2020 election loss to retain power as he tries to regain the White House in the 2024 elections. Brown reports.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump was indicted Tuesday on charges he illegally tried to upend his 2020 election loss to retain power. Special counsel Jack Smith said that lies by Trump fueled the uprising by his supporters at the U.S. Capitol.
The attack on our nation's capital on January 6, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy. As described in the indictment, it was fueled by lies. Lies by the defendant, targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government, the nation's process of collecting, counting, and certifying the results of the presidential election.
In response, the Trump campaign released a statement saying President Trump has always followed the law and the Constitution, with advice from many highly accomplished attorneys. He is expected to appear before a judge on Thursday in his first court appearance in the case. It is the second time Trump has been indicted in the past 2 months. Smith has accused Trump of illegally retaining dozens of highly classified national security documents at his Oceanside Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida after he left office. The documents should have been turned over to the National Archives, as he was required to do by U.S. law. A trial has been set for that case in May of next year. Michael Brown, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, VOA listeners across South Sudan and elsewhere share their testimonies as English to Africa prepares to celebrate its 6 years of broadcast into Africa. Find out more after this break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Former U.S. President Donald Trump continues to defy expectations as he surges ahead of other Republican contenders for the presidential nomination, despite multiple indictments against him and with words of support from some of his own rivals. As he was indicted again Tuesday over his attempts to overturn the 2020 elections, VOA's Anita Powell looks at the unprecedented path of the former president.
Donald Trump. Love him or hate him. For many Americans, there seems to be no in-between. The former president has spun his serious federal indictments to his political advantage, claiming the charges are politically motivated.
These are ridiculous indictments, and all they're doing is hoping for massive election interference. That's all they want to do. They want to damage the leading candidate.
With every new indictment, he gets a boost in the polls, giving him a double-digit lead in the Republican race for the nomination. And surprisingly, Trump's many, many, many presidential challengers, including his closest challenger, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, say they agree with him, as do some prominent Republicans in Congress, like House Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
They go after anybody who's running against the president, it seems as though. And if you go up in the polls, you're more likely to get indicted.
Others direct their ire at Special Counsel Jack Smith, who led the investigation that produced Tuesday's indictment over Trump's attempts to hold on to power after losing the 2020 election. Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene.
What Jack Smith is doing is the weaponized government. And he's weaponizing the Department of Justice against President Trump in a complete lie about President Trump and January 6th.
This support, says University of Texas history professor Jeremy Suri, may be in the candidate's self-interest. He spoke to VOA from Austin via Zoom.
The support that Trump is receiving from other Republican candidates and from other Republican office holders comes from the fact that the Republican primary system is a messed up system. It's a system that gives a small group of Republicans who turn out in these primaries, sometimes they're in caucuses, sometimes they're in voting primaries, they turn out and they don't represent the party, but they do provide the key votes in the primaries that determine who will be the nominee of the party.
The White House has repeatedly said it has no role in Trump's legal woes. While this situation may not be Biden's fault, this is a problem. Suri says the president needs to do three things. One, protect people's access to the vote. Two, make sure the justice system can do its work. And third, he says,
Biden should be educating the public.
He has just over a year to do that before America votes. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we move back to Juba. VOA's editor in Juba, Charlton Doki, has been working for VOA's English to Africa since 2010, and he has been on call through thin and thick. As VOA's English to Africa celebrates its 60th birthday of broadcasting into Africa on the 4th of August, Charlton reflects on what it means to be working for the Voice of America in South Sudan.
So people react differently, you know. Some who have not seen me physically will always express, you know, some kind of surprise. They wonder, like, they say, oh, so we thought you were some huge, tall man, you know, but you are short. We did not know that you are the one. And some of them are really happy. They say they are happy with the job we do, and they are finally happy to put a face to the voice that they have had. But yeah, also there are a few people who are very critical. You know, when you introduce yourself, they will say, oh, so you are the people who are criticizing the government. You know, you are the people who are not saying positive things about the government. But by and large, many of them are happy when they see us.
Before coming to the Voice of America, I'm sure you worked somewhere. How would you describe the experience and the work you're doing at English to Africa, Voice of America's English to Africa? How would you describe that experience?
I would say before joining the Voice of America, of course, I also worked for a radio station, but that was more local. Then Voice of America now is kind of international. The stories we cover are more in-depth because we are covering for an international audience. Also, we have this experience of working with people from other countries, interacting with people from other countries who are also working for the Voice of America. So I would say the experience now is more international than the experience I had before. Also, because we're working with different people, I would say, via learning, I'll say I've learned a lot in this job.
This week, this week on Friday, Voice of America is celebrating 60 years of dedicated service to listeners in Africa. How do you feel about that? I mean, you're part of the English to Africa. How do you feel about this, you know, three decades of serious job?
It feels really great. It feels great being part of this. You know, you feel you are part of the Voice of America, and you feel that if there are things that have been achieved, you've been part of this achievement. And if there is more work to be done, which, of course, I'm sure we still have more to do, it feels good that we've done what we've done, and we still have a lot to do. But generally speaking, it feels good. It feels great to be part of it.
Yeah, I also feel honored to be part of it. Talk to me about your good moments and bad moments during your 13-plus years with the Voice of America.
I'll tell you the best moment I can tell you was when we covered the declaration of South Sudan's independence. This is something that was really historical, being there, recording this history. And it felt so good being there, listening to the Speaker of Parliament by then, James Wanyika, who is now a vice president, you know, reading the Declaration of Independence and listening to President Salva Kiir giving his speech. And looking at all these leaders who had come to witness this event, I think that's the greatest moment I have had at the Voice of America during these 13 years. Some bad moments have been there when, you know, you've gone out and you've been harassed by security people. You're trying to cover a story or you're trying to interview some people and the security person comes and, you know, harasses you, stops you from doing the interview. We have had such experiences, and those, I would say, are the bad moments.
Yeah, and then in addition to those bad moments, I remember, how was your experience in 2013 when hell broke loose in the capital?
That's another bad moment, John. Being in a war zone was not easy at all. It was not a cup of tea. We were there, you know, you are a journalist, you want to cover the story, but you know you are also at risk. People are shooting here and there, even though you want to cover the story, but you also feel scared that you are in this war zone. You don't know if you will be hit by a bullet or you will be alive the next day. So that is another moment that was tough. 2013, 2016 as well. 2016, yeah. A similar experience as well.
As VOA celebrates its 60th anniversary of broadcasting into Africa, you are there with the audience. You do the work every day to keep audience informed. How do you feel?
I feel great. I feel great bringing these stories, especially stories that would never be told. Stories from the common people, bringing this to a larger audience. I feel great about it.
That's my colleague Charlton Duki, who is our editor in Juba. He was speaking to me this past hour. VOA's English to Africa service celebrates its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us to celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice message or text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what is your favorite program, or let us know about a particular news story that connected with you. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. That number again is +1 202 258 3076. And thanks for 60 years of support. Let's not. Let's now go for some testimonies from our listeners across South Sudan.
Hello, Voice of America. Happy 60th anniversary. My name is Steven from South Sudan, living in Juba. I'm a student and I'm one of your listeners. I really love VOA. I started listening to it probably 7 years ago from now. My favorite show from Africa, of course, South Sudan focus number one, then my favorite one among all was VOA Let's Talk, a program run by the host Sandy Shomari. I don't really know what happened to it right now. It longer doesn't appear on the podcast. All I wish for is VOA should continue giving us true live stories, news as it is recovered, and yeah, because VOA is where I get the real story. VOA is where I hear what is happening in South Sudan. Especially, it is very hard to get the true information inside a country full of rumors. Every people will be creating their own rumors wherever they are. But I get true stories of what's happening in South Sudan from VOA Africa. You're my best radio show ever. South Sudan focused, VOA. Yeah. Happy 60th anniversary. May you work for 200 more years. Thank you.
First of all, I would wish to say happy 60th anniversary to BOA Africa, which is the Voice of America. It's a great day that need to be celebrated worldwide. I like South Sudan in Focus because mostly it has been connecting the citizens all over the Africa from Uganda, South Sudan, Kenya, and the rest of the world. So which we as citizens, we look at ourselves being connected. One of the stories that I remember was in Uganda, one of the lady reported that there were some gender-based violent case which a girl was raped. And how they follow it up, I heard from BOA in that time, which has also given us that we, as women of South Sudan, what do we do in such scenarios if they happen, following the reports that that lady put on the news that day. So it has given us an attention that if such things happen, we have to get to understand and the way to approach it. We also need to have a citizen report where, for example, if there is a line that people can call, and you know, I might call from Rumbake or I might call from South Sudan or Uganda, that something happened, an event which is maybe can be a good event and can be also something which is so strange that other people want to get what has happened. Like the celebration of 60th anniversary, we can also call and, you know, you be heard, your name, where you are, and then you contribute. How do you feel about this day? So it can connect us because it's very important.
My name is James Mugen. Personally, I listen to South Sudan in Focus, the only program I like on the BOA. It is also the program I listen to here in Rumbek. And I like this program. It is so inclusive. It brings stories from Sudan, stories here in the country, South Sudan. And mostly it also brings stories that are difficult, hard stories, critical stories. And this country is going through a lot of issues, difficulties, and there are stories that are difficult to be accessed. And BOA does that, something I like about it. Recently, there was a program broadcast on BOA that was in Bor. There was a problem with the ECS, whereby the Prok Akudi was having an issue, the incoming bishop. It was a critical thing. I do follow, since last year it has been ongoing, and BOA did it extensively, and actually it is an ongoing program. What I like BOA to do is, you know, this country has gone through wars, a lot of issues. There are people who are actually traumatized by wars. They are being displaced. So I need BOA to be talking to such people to hear their experiences on how the country is going and how they are being displaced. Also, this country markets are dominated by the foreigners. This is what I know. And if BOA can bring stories, successful entrepreneurs, like hearing experiences, if they talk to people who are South Sudanese successful, they are doing businesses, BOA can talk to them, hear their stories, how they started their businesses and how they have become successful, and what they think South Sudanese can do, those who have not ventured into the market.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, August 2nd, 2023. We now leave you with General Paulino and the song Shikilmanga. Listening to General Paulino and the song Shikilmanga. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, David, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Good morning to you.